Welcome to It's All Recruiting, the show that looks at everything through the lens of recruiting. I'm your host, Jim Stroud.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, this time once again for the It's All Recruiting podcast with your host, the most, Jim Stroud. Quite recently, I had the very good pleasure of attending an event. It was the Indeed Explore event here in Atlanta, and I thought it was very cool for a number of reasons. One, they had really good food, really good swag, but most importantly, they had some really good information there. And it was one of those rare occasions where I just get so engrossed in the information that I'm just jotting down notes feverishly. And I thought, man, of all that they said, I still had more questions, and I was trying to get up to the speaker after the talk to ask more questions, but he was surrounded by fans and the adoring public in the room. But before he left, I was able to get his attention basically by tackling him to the floor and saying, dude, I got to have you on my show and ask you some more questions. And he was kind enough, benevolent enough, to agree to it. I guess that was the power of my influential bear hug on him. So if you would, kind sir, please introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what you do.
Absolutely. First of all, I've never had that sort of introduction. I was unaware that I had fans. You might be my only fan. In that case, it's okay. Happy to be here. My name is Kevin Walker, and I'm the Director of Employer Insights at Indeed.com. Said differently, I get the privilege of having the coolest job at a company full of pretty cool jobs. I get tasked with doing just this sort of stuff, going around having conversations with folks that really care about this space, and that's the recruiting space. And hopefully in those conversations bring with me some insight, some data, a perspective that you haven't seen before. And so I'm happy to chat with you today.
Very cool. Thank you so much. First question off my long list here. One of the things you talked about in your presentation, which I thought was pretty fascinating, and I couldn't get enough notes written down on it, was how employers can optimize their job descriptions for more views and more applicants. I think you were giving us some secret sauce around that. So what can employers do to optimize their job descriptions for more views?
Well, it's a common question we get, especially in that, we're a search engine. We're not a job board. And just like with any marketing organization trying to optimize for their performance on Google or Bing or what have you, the most successful recruiting organizations are focusing on how to optimize for their results on a job search engine like Indeed. And I could spend hours talking about the science around algorithms and the math and how we look at relevance and specificity around a query such as nursing in New York or sales in Chicago. I'm not going to do that because at the end of the day, recruiters don't have any influence or any control over the algorithms. What you do have control over, though, are three very important things, and that's the job title, the job description, and then to a degree, the job location. And so as you think about job titles, the best-in-class organizations that have really figured out how to outperform the market to the tune of, 300% better results is they've mastered what we call the science and the art of job content. The science is just that. You should be looking at job titles from a data-driven way. And so we really suggest that, especially for those high-volume roles, you A-B test the job title. And A-B testing is very simply put, hold everything static except one variable. And in this case, that variable would be the job title, right? And so the example I gave when you and I were able to the chat in Atlanta would be the marketing coordinator 3 versus marketing event coordinator. And we had a customer that had that job. They put in the market those two exact titles with the exact same job description, the exact same time period, and the exact same investment. The results were astounding, 10 times the number of sponsored clicks, 3 times the number of organic clicks. And I think we can all see why. What does a marketing coordinator 3 do? And the answer is we're not quite sure, right? But the marketing event coordinator is much more specific, much more to the point. As a result, it's going to be shown more, but more importantly, clicked more and ultimately applied more from a potential job seeker.
You know,
should I move on to the art?
Well, yeah, sure, go ahead. I'll interject after that. Go ahead.
Sure. I mean, the art is a lot harder to put your head around. As I travel around and talk to folks like yourself, your peers, direct organizations, recruiting organizations, it's really clear to me that talent acquisition executives have put a premium on finding people with marketing backgrounds. And I'm seeing more and more folks with marketing backgrounds work their way into the talent acquisition space, whether it be recruiting or direct. And that's because job descriptions, which used to be a means to an end. When I worked at a Fortune 50 company, my job description was just something I had to do in order to get my rec open with HR. Now, folks, at least the ones that are really doing a good job of optimizing their results on search engines, are seeing job descriptions as an opportunity, as a first point of engagement for the potential job seeker. And so certainly it's used in our algorithms to judge relevance, but if you imagine a job seeker reading that, you know, you can weed out bad cultural fits. You can excite a great cultural fit on the potential of becoming part of your company. And it's important to also use metrics. So one metric I'll leave you with is we know that job descriptions between 700 and 2,000 characters drive 30% more applies than those that are shorter or longer. Now, we got to be careful. It's not causation. It's correlation. So you can't just go cut your job description and think you're going to get more applies. But those people who put cognitive effort, real thought into what words to use, how to make points clearly and succinctly, and get that job description between 700 and 2,000 characters, we see them driving far more applies.
Very interesting. When you were talking about that during the talk, I saw the little light bulbs start to appear over the heads of everyone in the room. I'm curious about this. Do you see the A-B testing that you mentioned? You see that as a function of the recruiting team, or do you see that as a function of maybe the marketing team? I know here at Randstad Sourceright, we have an employer branding expert who helps our clients do that very thing. But I'm wondering for people who would be listening who might have access to us, do you see that as a function of the recruiting department or a function of the marketing department?
You know, that's a tricky question in that it really depends on the organizational structure of each given employer or recruiting organization. At the end of the day, I think it's whoever is closest to working with Indeed or whatever search engine you're talking about. And that people who are face-to-face engaging with our client services team who owns the campaign management engagement from our end, that person would be best suited. And often it is, to your point, somebody in employment brand or online marketing. But in some organizations, we're dealing directly with the director of talent acquisition in that engagement. So I'd say whoever's closest to the platform that can get their hands dirty and roll up their sleeves would be the appropriate person to do that.
Okay. Which also makes me wonder, if I was that person per se, should I be so concerned about optimizing for Indeed or optimizing for the job board is actually on, if it's not on Indeed per se. Say I have the job, I'm posting it to Simply Hired or Dice or what have you, and I want to optimize there. But do I also have to do two different jobs so it optimizes well on Dice as well as on Indeed?
You know, that's a absolutely fair and good question. Here's my thoughts. Search engines are search engines to begin with. And certainly our algorithms and our methodology is going to differ from their true search engines, and you probably or you could get different results based on your testing. I'm biased, but I fundamentally believe you should be optimizing for where all the job seekers are, or at least certainly most of the job seekers. And if you turn to ComScore, which is an independent third party that looks at internet traffic, it's really clear that there's more job seekers based on traffic on Indeed than anywhere else. So I would start there, right? And if you have the flexibility and the time, certainly if other outlets are proving to be of importance to you, go focus there and optimize there as well. But that doesn't seem to be the case very often, in that time is short, resources are constrained, budgets certainly are compressed or being tested and stressed. So I would start where the bigger population is and then work my way down.
Okay. Another question, employer brand, how does that affect job seeker applies? So, for example, if there's a job at Google for a software engineer, and then there's also a job for Bob's Crab Shack, and Bob Crab Shack does not have the cachet of a Google, how does that affect how job seekers apply for jobs? Do they just automatically go to the bigger brand and ignore the other job, or it doesn't matter?
Yeah, no, so the data that I have access to, you know, again, the fact that I have 180 million unique visitors gives me a really wide view, an instant perspective of kind of the trends that are happening, because as a result, we collect about 6 terabytes of data. And when I look at that data, the challenge is Google, in your example, is always going to drive more applies and more hires because they have far, far more jobs than the Bob's Crab Shack in your example. Mm-hmm. I will say this, though. Online reviews and search engines like ours have, in a way, democratized and made employment brand a little bit more of an even playing field because job seekers really do care about reviews and what people say about what it's like to work at a given organization. And the data that we have and the surveys we've done says that 83% of all job seekers say that reviews impact where they choose to apply or not apply. And even those that have applied and gone through the interview process and have a job offer in hand, 46%, so nearly half of them still say that reviews impact where they choose to apply or take the job offer or not. Right. And so my guidance to anybody that's out there looking for talent is to make sure that you have, through every outlet possible, Indeed included, gone out and made sure that you are focusing on your online brand. You're encouraging current employees to review what it's like to work at your environment. Many employers say, oh, I'm not going to ask my current employees to go review me. I'm worried about what they'd say. Well, the reality is they're there for a reason, and they're still there for a reason. And if you don't do that, you're leaving to those that have left to tell the story or tell your story. And so, get your current employees to review what it's like to work for your company. And then there's lots of outlets. Everything I've just referenced on Indeed is free. And you'd be amazed at how many employers haven't gone and claimed their page, which allows them to manage the story, manage the copy, upload their photos and videos, logos, and a lot of enhancements are coming down the path in the next couple of quarters.
Leaving it more so for a lot of disgruntled employees to leave that information, which is another reason I would think that you would want your present-day employees to leave reviews, because if people leave your company and they're disgruntled, then they're going to say a lot of bad things. So you need a lot of good stuff from your present employees to sort of offset that, I would imagine.
That's a fair, but you'd still be actually pretty you may be surprised when you go out and look at the reviews. Even those that have left are fair. There's the occasional true disgruntled employee maybe, but people that leave tend to have a pretty fair view of what it's like to work there, and you'd see very constructive comments. One thing I just have to mention, at Indeed, we do have a verification process. So we only allow people who have their a company listed in their resume to review that particular company. Not necessarily the industry standard, but we think it's only fair that actual employees review what it's like to work at a company. So we don't let somebody that's had a bad interview process or a bad customer experience to review that organization. And to your comments earlier about the bad interviews or bad reviews, the job seekers are fair in their analysis when they read an occasional bad review versus the average. And also, if you go claim your page on Indeed, we allow you for free to go respond to reviews. And that's a very effective way, probably more effective than having positive reviews, in showing or signaling to the market that you're engaged as an employer, is when you respond to a bad review and say, thank you for the feedback, by the way, here's some things we're doing to address the exact feedback that you happen to offer. That's another great way of showing potential job seekers that you're engaged and focused on improvement.
That emphasizes something I've been sort of preaching a lot to clients, the importance of fostering a good work culture. Because to your example, it sort of equalizes the playing field so you can compete against the Googles or the Facebooks of the world. If a lot of your employees are saying great and wonderful things about you in social media and in forums like the ones you mentioned, that can be just as an attractive carrot to a passive candidate or to a job seeker who'll say, okay, even though they're not as well known as this other company, I'm reading and hearing a lot of good things about what it's like to work there, so I'm going to give them a strong consideration. And I'm also thinking about how the average, I think, millennial worker hops around. I won't say hops around, but they'll take on more jobs than, say, the baby boomer generation would in their lifetime. So they may be thinking at it from the standpoint of, I'll go ahead and work over here instead of this other name brand company that I know about because the work culture is so good, and I'll work there for so many years, and then I'll consider going to this other place later. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. You know, listen, Google's an awesome company. I don't want to dismiss how
it is.
The things they're doing. However, they're a big company, right? And there are plenty of employees or potential employees out there that no matter how innovative that company continues to be, they just, you know, a big company's not for them. And so, again, this transition to online search as the entry point for people finding jobs, the reviews and the online employment brand that has resulted in these online platforms has, again, put the smallest of employers on a much more even playing field, especially if you can optimize around it. You know, one point, you talk about that millennial. Absolutely, they're going to have more jobs in their lifetime than a baby boomer has on average. But one thing I have to share is the popularity that we're seeing with the search term part-time, meaning not just millennials, Gen Xers, baby boomers. Flexible work environments are becoming increasingly important, which means that one employee might work for different multiple employers at a time. They may move around more. And just, again, an interesting trend we see, whether it be a millennial that has a different view of work, whether it be a Gen Xer that's got an aging parent they need to take care of, or a baby boomer that's not ready to retire but just doesn't want to work full time. So those are interesting types of insights that we're seeing emerge over time on our platform.
Interesting. Let me explore that a little bit more. So you're seeing how workers are maybe viewing themselves more so as independent contractors who take on different projects with multiple employers versus rather than being an employee for one particular company. Do you think that's
that's certainly shift? One implication of the trend. Another one might be that they don't want to work a full 40 to 60 hours and are okay taking a scaled pay based on the hours they work. It might mean that they want to split time between an office and a home office. There's a lot of implications of the flexible work environment. I just think that this notion of work, of going to an office at a fixed facility, spending time from 8 to 6 every day there, is shifting. And, you know, there's a lot of implications that come from that. You know, also, it's interesting when you hear part-time, an initial reaction to many of the people that I have the opportunity to talk with think that, well, that means you must be having low-quality or low-skilled labor using your platform. Interestingly enough, one of the top five most popular search terms for people who hold a STEM job, so that's the, you know, the mathematicians, the data scientists, the software developers, part-time is in one of the top five most popular search terms as I look at the last year. And so it's not excluded just to the low quality or the low-skilled labor.
That's interesting. Now, those jobs that are part-time, from your notice, do they tend to be virtual jobs?
You know, it ranges. It ranges. And, you know, to be candid, there may not be a lot of part-time jobs out there. But if employers are looking at trends and looking at how people are looking for work today, you know, this is the advantage of looking at search data rather than relying on BLS historical trends, is the labor, reports that come out from the U.S. government are going to have a historical view, get updated and revised multiple times, and told you, you know, tell you essentially, hey, what happened a year ago? Search data kind of gives you a forward-looking view of what's happening today. And so employers that are having a hard time filling the software developer role, the nursing role, may want to look at this trend and say, what can I be doing differently to make myself more attractive to a potential employee? And that might be, hey, I'm going to have to fill this one job with two people that want to work part-time, or I'm going to need to provide flexible work environment where I allow them to work from home or work from a remote location on a temporary basis. So there's a lot of implications. I think it's going to depend on the organization.
Sure, and I'd like to actually open up a challenge to listeners. If you know of a company or a case study where a company might have, say, taking a role of a software engineer, for example, and broken it up into shifts and actually hired two people for one particular role and let them, either one of them work, part-time, and how that worked out for them. I would be very curious to know of a case study around that because I find that very interesting.
Me too. If you hear something, please let me know. I mean, I can tell you for a fact I've seen it happen around me in previous employment situations. The situation is, happened to have two peers who were expecting their first child. Both were top-notch employees that we did not want to lose, right? But both decided during their time away, during maternity leave, that they didn't want to be a full-time employee, but they didn't want to be a full-time mom. And so the fact that we saw them as high-quality talent, we didn't want to leave, they entered into a job share environment where together owned the relationship with a set of customers and did a fine job, and together were some of our best-performing salespeople. So that's one example off. They're out there, but I'd love to see any more that come back from the listeners.
Wow, definitely. I read recently something that's being termed mobilegeddon, where Google is giving more search engine results preferences to websites that are mobile-friendly. When I read that, the first thing I thought about was how that could affect the rankings of jobs out there. When people do a search for various jobs on Google, they're going to see more so those jobs from websites that are mobile-friendly. How is that affecting things over at Indeed? I'm sort of curious.
Yeah, no, mobile is not something that's happening or going to happen. It has clearly happened, right? Over half of all of the billions of queries we see come into our platform each month, over half of them, again, come from a mobile device, and that's either a smartphone or a tablet. So a couple points to your question. Mobilegeddon, I haven't heard it. That's interesting. I agree in the context of employers and job seekers, it is mobilegeddon because if you allow me to use the Fortune 500 as a proxy, under 10% of all employers can accept a mobile apply. And so over half of all queries or searches are on mobile, but only 10% or less can take a mobile apply. So that does spell some problematic challenges in the future, near future, or right now for employers. Now, the Google example, they are doing that. Here's the deal. Do not try to win on your job being shown on Google. And I'm just going to be candid because Indeed is going to beat you. We have an entire team that's probably as big or bigger than many recruiting teams that are at our own customers. And their whole job is to optimize our results for Google. We have a very large line item in our budget to market and optimize our results on Google. And you can test that by going out and searching anything, accounting in Chicago, sales in New York, and you'll see how many results on that page one are Indeed jobs. Instead, spend the time optimizing your results for Indeed because we're going to bring the traffic from Google to Indeed, and then we're going to show your results. And so back to the job titles and the job descriptions, the art and the science. To your particular mobile question, we're not going to show preference based on the mobile engagement or the mobile readiness. But we will certainly not allow you to sponsor jobs on our mobile platform unless you can take a mobile apply. And so there's certainly some advantages that you're going to see by being optimized for mobile on our platform. The biggest one, candidly, is being able to take and apply from one of the 180 million job seekers on our platform. About 25%, and that's growing, of all users never access our platform on anything but a mobile device. And so it becomes a very simple math problem. If you can't show your job content clearly on a mobile device, if you can't take a mobile apply, you essentially can't address a quarter of the job seeker market on the number one job site in the world. And so that, in my mind, one of the most important focus areas that I would suggest any talent acquisition team focus on as they're thinking about their priorities in the coming year is making sure you can take a mobile apply.
Every year, I always read at least, two or three articles about that say job boards are dead. Job boards are dead, and they're going to go away of the dinosaur, but they're still there, like email. They're not going anywhere. What do you think the future of job boards are these days, or will be, rather?
Well, that's a loaded question, and I want to be careful across as salesy. Job boards, if you are a fan of technology and a fan of the Internet and just watching trends, certainly there are job boards here in the U.S. that were darlings of the Internet and did amazing things and were amazing companies. And so I want to be fair and respectful of what they've done. The model has changed. Search engines are how people make decisions, right? Whether it be a vacation or buying a home or finding a potential mate, you turn to search engines like Travelocity or Zillow or Match. And job search is no different. People go to search engines to conduct their searches. And we solve a very fundamental challenge with the search engine. There are literally hundreds of thousands of places out there that have jobs that a job seeker may be interested in. Job boards are some of those places. And so instead of a job seeker going to place to place to place to place to look for a job, they go to one place, a search engine, and then we show them all the jobs that we can in the world. Some of them are on those job boards. And so I won't predict what's happening in the future, because anytime you try to predict what happens in the future, you're most likely going to be wrong. But I will look at the recent past, and the trends are pretty overwhelming. Our traffic as the number one job site in the world is skyrocketing. We have to be careful not to update our numbers too often, because it's a lot of work to go update the materials. But I've been here just over a year, and we certainly have gone from 120 million to 140 million, 180 million. Per month of people coming to the platform. And unfortunately, the facts are the facts, and job board traffic is certainly going in the other direction.
Wow. I definitely appreciate your time and learning so much and being with you to geek out on all this data. Is there anything that you may want to add that isn't too salesy about data and how it relates to the whole job board, job seeking process that might be of interest to our listeners?
No, I would just end with data has got to be an integral part to your decision-making process as a recruiter. Just like marketing has changed as a fundamental profession, recruiting has changed. And those recruiters who have realized the shift that's occurred and takes hold of the data that's available and then makes decisions based on that data, will win. And I don't want to go back to that cliche of the war for talent, but as unemployment drops, there's certainly far less job seekers that are unemployed, meaning you have to steal and convince people to leave a job to come to yours. It's getting harder. And that recruiter or that talent acquisition team or that recruiting company that uses data to make their decisions moves dollars away from low-performing or underperforming vehicles into high-performing, highly effective vehicles, they will win. And there's no doubt in my mind that that's the case. And so I'll end with simply a thank you for your time as well. It's always fun to talk this type of stuff. And I will extend to your listeners an invitation to, join me in a conversation. I'm not in sales. I get paid to talk data, talk trends, and really do care about helping people find jobs. And to do that, I want to make recruiting organizations as effective as they can on our platform, which again happens to be the number one job site in the world. So reach out. I'm at Twitter at KPWalk, and connect with me there, and I'm happy to come out and have a conversation with you anytime you let me.
I'll also add a link to it inside of the podcast description as well. Thank you so much again for your time. I do appreciate you very much, and let's do it again soon.
Absolutely, Jim. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much for listening. If you were not there, then I would be here talking to myself, so thank you for that. If you would, check out the links in the podcast description because they are there for you. Finally, if you love what you heard, hate what you heard, or not quite sure what you just heard, I want to know about it. Connect with me on Twitter at Jim Stroud or LinkedIn or Google Plus or pretty much anywhere you find me online. I'm everywhere, everywhere. Okay, enough of that. Until next time, one last word spoken three times to my people at Randstad Sourceright. Love, love, love.